The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.
Has some angle. Can he find the third? Oh, that is beautiful. Machi's got the speed. Has he got the touch? There's your answer.
Hello and welcome to the latest Rapids podcast. Lots to get through as usual in this edition, including a wonderful chat with the Rapids number 94, Marlon Hairston. We'll also discuss the upcoming return to action. That's a home game Saturday against Minnesota, the World Cup, and an eagerly anticipated international friendly. Richard Fleming with you at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Marcelo Balboa in California. You can probably hear that background noise. Doing exactly what, Cello?
We're out here for the DA playoffs. The 17 and the 19s are in the playoffs, and the U15s are in a showcase.
Okay, how have things gone so far?
Yeah, not as planned. Not as planned, unfortunately. We took a late goal against Portland, went down 2-1, and then yesterday, it was unfortunate. We gave up an own goal early, and we chased the game a little bit, took control the second half, but just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net and went down 1-0.
Okay. Well, good luck over the next few days. You've got a few more games to go. Got more to come?
One more. We got Philadelphia on Friday, and the 17s play today against the Columbus Crew Wolves. So it's pretty good. Seattle and the U15 boys today tied 0-0. So that was a good game. So overall, it hasn't been bad.
Okay, well, wonderful. We'll see you, of course, when you get back, but all the best for the next few days. That brings us to the ongoing festivities then in Russia, the World Cup, which, look, what's happened to Argentina?
You know, they're thinking slowly. Remember we talked before the World Cup started, my concerns with Argentina was their goalkeeper and their back line. And if you look at today's game, is exactly what happened. They're not creating, they're not penetrating, they're not dangerous going forward right now. So it's a team that's just barely afloat. You know, now they got to wait for to the last game to see what happens against Nigeria, to see if they can get a win, and may have to come down to goal differential. But they could be the first big seed out of this World Cup.
Is this one of those occasions, and we see it in sport, where a team that is made up of very talented individuals plays as individuals and does not play as a team? Is this because there's no way that man for man Iceland should have held Argentina man for man, but when you can play as a team, you might not have the strongest individual players. Is that maybe Argentina's problem? They're playing as a group of individuals, not as a team?
I think that's part of it. And I just don't think the surrounding cast that Messi has is that good. I think, listen, when you go to Di Maria, Aguero, you're looking at some guys, Higuain, they've got guys that are talented going forward. But when you start talking about the back and you start talking about the goalkeeper that got hurt who couldn't come back in time, you know, or the Mendy in the back, it's not a team that's well-rounded. It's very offensive-minded, but even that right now is struggling. You know, I think Messi being put in the middle of the field is a guy who's just being, they're collapsing on him. There's no room for him to create, so he's trying to pull himself wide. That leaves a gap in the middle. So I think, I'll be honest with you, I really think they got the wrong coach, and the wrong coach is playing the wrong system.
But that was always kind of thrown out about Brazil, wasn't it, down the years? In the Brazil were one of those sides that they didn't always have to kind of concern themselves with defending because they were so strong offensively. Yeah. You know, we can see two, we'll score three. We give up four, we'll score five. Yep. You'd think that Argentina would give opposing teams enough to worry about defensively, but they just seem to be all disheveled and out of shape at the moment.
Listen, the idea is the fact that Argentina doesn't have the players like Spain does. And when you don't have those kind of players, you can't play that kind of soccer. In the World Cup, teams are going to drop back into a block of 40 yards. How do you break those down? And with Messi, they've got so many bodies around him that they try to spray the ball wide to Di Maria, but Di Maria's not in great form. Aguero's not in great form. So you start looking at players that haven't been playing a lot of minutes in their club team. So I think it's starting to show.
We always make that comparison, don't we? Messi, who's the best, Messi or Ronaldo? Well, certainly on his showing so far, Ronaldo seems to be head and shoulders above Lionel Messi, certainly on an individual basis. Four goals from Portugal's first two games. He seems to be running the show for Portugal. Is that a concern, though? As a coach, when there's an over-reliance, and, you know, I'm looking at it as the glass half empty, an over-reliance on one player basically bringing all the magic. They're going to have to wrap him in cotton wool, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they're going to protect him. But I think that if you look at Portugal, the surrounding cast aren't superstars, but they're good quality star. I mean, good quality players that just allow Ronaldo to do what he wants. Plus, Ronaldo's more on the left-hand side. He's on the right-hand side. He switches back and forth. He's finding space. So it's completely different. Argentina right now is just relying completely on Messi. And if you take Messi out of the game, Argentina's done. And that's what Croatia did today.
And what side of the fence are you on with regards to Landon Donovan, Carlos Bocanegra, Taylor Twellman, anybody else that goes into that mix? Are you supporting the CONCACAF teams? Are you very much anti-Mexico? Where are you with that one?
Listen, first of all, being a rival of the United States, I don't think you would ever, ever catch an ex-national team player from Mexico if Mexico didn't qualify. With a thing saying support the United States, support the other team. That would never happen, ever happen. So, listen, to each their own. They can do whatever they want. I love Mexico. I love the Mexican people. I have tons of Mexican friends. That doesn't mean I have to like the Mexican national team. There's a rivalry. It's always been a rivalry. So I don't see myself cheering for them. I'm cheering for everybody in CONCACAF. I want the region to do well. So when the next World Cup comes and they're adding more teams, we get more spots. But I'm not just cheering for Mexico. I'm cheering for all of CONCACAF.
And this is a conversation you and I have had with it. Obviously, it's prevalent in Major League Soccer. But we're moving on to video review. It's, again, you know, it's the biggest stage of all, the World Cup. There's been some big, big decisions, but it has still divided opinion. It's got the big decisions. In the main, it's got the big decisions right.
It's got the game breakers, the game changers, they've gotten right. So I am 100% okay with it. Am I still a big fan of it? I'm still tweaking it a little bit, which I'm okay with. But at the end of the day, I would say right now in the World Cup, for me, it's like 80-20 that I'm liking it because they've been pretty close to making all the right calls.
And it's been interesting as well that once the calls have been made and there was the call with the Iran against Spain when they had the goal ruled out. Once the decision was made, you could see all the players clamoring around the referee. And then when the decision was made, that was it. There was no more complaints. Yep. The complaints died because I think the players realised that it's gone to video review. It's a black or a white situation. We've come down on this decision. So the one positive is there doesn't seem to be that reaction, that negative reaction from players feeling that they've been, you know, poorly treated.
Well, they went and they looked at it and they got it right. You know what I mean? Before they would move on, then maybe Spain is bitching and complaining because maybe they didn't catch the offside. You know what I mean? So they went back, they reviewed it. And once the decision's made, they went back and looked at it 3, 4, 5 different ways. But at the end of the day, Richard, they got it right. And imagine if that goal goes in. Now Spain is in a different situation. They're with 2 points in 2 games, and now it's a must-win game for them in the final. Now it's 4 points and a must tie. So, you know what I mean? These are the kind of decisions that I think it's helping the World Cup.
What about here in the US? And obviously, you know, the sore is still open with regards to the US not being there. But there has been the question has been posed, will this be a World Cup that USA fans get behind? Will they support? Will they watch in numbers? What are you seeing?
Of course we will. Of course we will. We love soccer. This is becoming more and more a soccer nation. So the World Cup's the biggest sport in the world. You've got a lot of different ethnicities in the United States, and they're all watching the World Cup. So the American Outlaws, all those fan clubs are supporting teams. Maybe they're not supporting their team, but they're supporting their second team. So, listen, soccer is becoming a fast-growing sport here in the professional level all the way down. So, of course, people, I mean, we've walked out on the field and people are watching games on their phones. So, at the end of the day, people are backing this and are watching. I mean, we'll find out eventually the numbers of the ratings of what Fox and Telemundo get. But right now, everywhere I've gone, people are watching. Today, I was watching a game. And the coach from the LA Galaxy turns to me in Spanish and says to me, so far we're good at 0-0. So, you know what I mean? It's that much in everybody's, it's that much in everybody's blood that everybody wants to know how teams are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, from the international stage to matters closer to home, game 15 for the Rapids coming up this Saturday. That's next. We'll talk Minnesota on the Rapids podcast.
The Colorado Rapids take on Minnesota United FC on June 23rd at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
And into the wall, but it's Tim Howard, once again with a massive save.
Bring your whole family, no matter the size, courtesy of the Coca-Cola Family Plan. Starting at only $30, you get a ticket to the game, a meal and a Coke.
Badgley delivers! A burgundy wave here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Get your tickets now at coloradorapids.com.
Yeah, so Minnesota United visiting Dick's Sporting Goods Park this weekend. The Rapids 2-9-3, sitting bottom of the Western Conference. Minnesota 5-8-1, 7 points and 3 places better off. This a Minnesota side, though, which have conceded an average of 3 goals per game over the last 5 on the road, all of which are losses. They are 1-6-0 away from home. This is a big chance for the Rapids to get what would be a first win in 10 league outings, Cello.
Yeah, it'd be huge. You know, I think we talked about it when we a few weeks ago when we talked about 4 of the 5 games at home and they needed at least a minimum of 9 points. Well, you know, unfortunately, things haven't gone their way. Last opportunity, really, you had a little bit of a break. You're able to get some healthy bodies back. You're able to get some guys a little bit more fitness. So, you know, this is basically the second part of the season. So they definitely need to start winning some games at home. A result isn't anymore a tie at home. A result was a result to get out of that slump they were in, and they broke that slump. Now it's time, when you're at home, you have to get 3 points because there's not much room left for any kind of mistakes.
Some big games that they've had, the likes of New York City, New York Red Bull, Sporting Kansas City, some tough, and we see where they are in their respective standings. Coming up now, though, you've got Minnesota, Vancouver away, they're just on the cusp, Seattle at home, Montreal away, Houston at home, RSL away. This is a big spell where the Rapids can kind of chip their way into to the teams above them. Now, as a player, do you look at the playoff places and say, how far are we from that? Or do you look at the team immediately? In other words, is it small steps? Is it small goals that you're setting yourself?
No, I think everybody looks at it different. And I think that's the beauty of it. I always looked at the sixth place. How far are we from that sixth place? And how can we get there? You know what I mean? And it's, let's be honest, it's going to be make or break now. They've got a lot of Western Conference opponents. This is your opportunity to climb up the standings when you beat these guys, if you can beat them and get some results. And let's be honest, you're also going to need a few teams to do you a few favors to allow you to crawl your way back up. Because right now you're crawling. You're not going to take a huge jump by winning one game. You're going to crawl your way up. And now transfer window opens. You know, other teams are going to go and buy players. We've already talked about Seattle and what they're talking about doing. So it's just a matter of time where Colorado needs to start crawling up the ladder.
It's a big ask. It's a big gap. But a win can turn into another win. It's funny how these things begin to kind of snowball. It's getting that first. They've got the monkey off their back with that draw against Chicago. It's now about turning that 1 point into 3 points and then see where the next few games take you.
Yeah, I don't know if I got the monkey off their back, but when you go that long and you just get a point, I mean, I think it's 9 games, right? 1 point. We were talking the other day. I don't know if it got the monkey off your back, but it definitely started building. It started giving you confidence. You got a point again instead of, you know, if you got a win, that obviously you got the monkey off your back. But Colorado needs a win. A tie here, a tie there isn't going to be good enough at home. And the longer it goes, the transfer windows open up. Teams are going to start pulling away. They're going to spend money. So, again, for me, Colorado needs to win a game. They need to win a game to get the monkey off their back. And that right there, if it works like most teams, you win one, you win a second one, you start building that confidence back, you get a little bit of luck, the ball bounces your way, you get a third win. So 3 or 4 wins in a row can put Colorado right back in the playoff race.
That is this Saturday against Minnesota United. Let's look ahead to the weekend's contest with the thoughts of head coach Anthony Hudson.
We obviously accept a lot of the criticism, and we accept, and it's rightly so, but one thing that no one can argue against the players, they haven't not worked hard, and even on this run they have kept going the whole time, and I think you saw that on Wednesday as well. Same thing, we kept going, pushing for the winner. I think we were unlucky not to get the winner at the end, but the bottom line is the players kept going, and they've kept going the whole time. So I think they need, the break was good timing, and they've certainly come in in a much physically fresher. But I know we're all in the place of knowing that, you know, we've moved on from that run, and now we're all looking forward, and we know exactly what's going to get us to the type of performances we need. I think the biggest thing is we sort of stopped the bleeding. The longer it went on, the more pressure was on. It was affecting confidence. I mean, that's done now. That's done now. We're not going to go through that again. I can tell you that for sure. We ain't going through that again. And one thing's clear. Everyone's clear about what needs to go into getting a performance for us. And this week's been good. I think it's been good having a long week as well, so we can have some really good sessions. And it does. I think just from the coaching staff, the players, I think it feels like a weight off the shoulders. But certainly, I think everyone's looking forward. We've moved on from that, and we need to move on from it. We're in a place now. We're at home. I think all the games, bar, you know, probably one the. You know, I think all games at home, we've been very strong. We've created lots of chances, and I expect us to do the same now. I think this game is more, we're very clear on what they do, but this game's about us. It's about us, because we know on our day, we've caused problems to the biggest teams in the league at home, and that is every team in the country, really. They're all the biggest, we've caused them problems. It's a game that we're really looking forward to. It's about us, and it's about us backing ourselves, being aggressive, and not worrying too much about the opposition.
Anthony Hudson there talking earlier this week. Before we move on, congratulations to former Rapid striker Kevin Doyle and his wife Jenny. They welcomed their third child, Ethan Edward Doyle, into the world earlier this week. Mum and son are doing well. Other news to emerge this week, the Rapids will face Boca Juniors at Dick's Sporting Goods Park on July 24th. That game presented by Western Union. Your thoughts on that one as a contest, Cello?
I'm excited. Anytime you're able to bring Boca or River Plate, whichever, you know, you could bring from Argentina, one of the top two teams, you've got to be ecstatic. And again, listen, these are the kind of games people want to see. They want to see international friendlies. They want to see them at Dick's. So I think it's a great move. I don't know how big the Argentine population is in Denver, but I hate to say the, because if I say that, my dad will kill me because he's a River Plate fan. So it's one of the top two best teams in Argentina.
Well, I was going to say that. For those that are not familiar with Argentine football, how big are Boca?
Well, they are the, if you want to go with the Manchester United of England, this was where Maradona came from, this was where Canilla came from, this is where a lot of the players that have come out of the Argentine national teams either come out of River or come out of Boca. So you're looking at two of the biggest clubs and two of the biggest youth developers and youth in Argentina. So when you talk about bringing the elite of the elite, you're bringing in the elite of what Boca has, and more than likely you'll see some of their stars, but you'll also see some of the up-and-coming talent that they've been developing over the last year or two.
And somebody like Carlos Tevez, to see him out of here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, that'll be a treat on its own, just to see him gracing the grass here.
Exactly. Guys like that, you gotta hope that they come in, they play, and you know, who knows, you may be seeing future national team stars out on the field with Boca, because they've got some 19, 20-year-olds who are very talented and prospects of being sold to Europe. And that's the idea for Boca and for River, is the idea is how quickly can you develop these young kids and sell them and keep doing that.
Well, you can get to that game. Call 303-825-GOAL. Go to coloradorapids.com for tickets to this first ever meeting with this prestigious opponent, Rapids versus Boca Juniors, in what should be quite a game.
More important dates to remember.
Time now for the Cardell Homes Community Spotlight, where we bring you up to speed on events and initiatives involving your Colorado Rapids. Earlier this week, on Tuesday, the Rapids hosted a futsal clinic in partnership with Wendy's at the Suncor Boys and Girls Club. Zach McMath was there to help out with the clinic and sign autographs for the kids. Elsewhere, Edgar Castillo was at the British Bulldog on Wednesday, signing autographs and meeting fans in partnership with Anheuser-Busch.
We're all different.
Race.
Religion.
Gender.
Sexual orientation.
We embrace our differences
and celebrate our diversity.
We don't bully or discriminate. Everyone is welcome. This is Major League Soccer.
Yes, for the entire month of June, the Colorado Rapids will be celebrating MLS Works new campaign, Soccer for All. In collaboration with the campaign, the Rapids will be hosting their annual Pride Night this coming Saturday, June 23rd. We've got a special Pride Night ticket package that includes one ticket to the game against Minnesota United and a limited edition scarf for just $35. A portion of each ticket will benefit Gay Bowl 18. That's hosted by the Denver Gay and Lesbian Flag Football League at Dick's Sporting Goods Park this coming September. And this Saturday, the Colorado Rapids Special Olympics Unified team will be taking on Minnesota Unified directly following the conclusion of the first team match. Fans encouraged to stick around and cheer on the athletes for their first home match of the season. Back in a moment.
The Colorado Rapids take on Minnesota United FC on June 23rd at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Starting at only $30, you get a ticket to the game, a meal and a Coke, courtesy of the Coca-Cola Family Plan. ColoradoRapids.com.
So the Rapids home to Minnesota this Saturday, expecting our next guest to feature. Marlon Hairston missed 9 games due to injury, returning on June the 6th in the Open Cup at Nashville. He's since started the last 2 league games. I sat down with him for a deep dive into his love for the game, his soccer story, and growing up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Well, Marlon, born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi, the crossroads of the South. Describe Jackson to those that have never visited.
It's different. It's different from a lot of the other states in America, I think. Jackson builds a bunch of character. A lot of people that grew up there, they know each other. It's a big family, and I think, in a sense, you enjoy, being brought up in that environment, but, at the same time, you would like to try to make it out of there and do something even bigger.
I mean, it's just fascinating looking at Jackson as a city, and obviously Mississippi as a state. That area was hugely relevant with the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s, and yet as recently as 2013, it was voted among the top 10 friendliest cities. How has it shaped you?
It's been huge for my development as a soccer player, but even more as a human being and as a man. My father was a big figure in my life, so the different characteristics that they brought me upon were huge, and it's something that I try to keep with me to this day. And like you said, Mississippi, one of the hospitality states of the U.S., and everybody down there is friendly, very outgoing. But at the same time, it's not a place where you can go and just be expected to get by, with anything, and just being the nicest person. You definitely have to, have a little bit of character and a little bit of toughness about you.
I saw that wonderful message that your mum sent through, which was it was the Mother's Day.
Right.
Family seems to be really strong.
Right.
Seems to really important for you. How have they helped to shape you and ground you as well? And who would you say your father's your role model?
Right.
You've got an older brother.
Right.
Seems really important.
Yeah, they were huge for me. Still to this day, the little things that they do for me, you don't really understand it as much until you get to an age that I am now, and I understand, the sacrifices that they made for me growing up, in between, soccer, basketball, football even, the sacrifices that they made for me week in, week out. You start to understand it the older you get, and, I'm so appreciative, for those little things.
There seems to be a little spark of mischief with your mum as well. She seems to be a wonderful character, and that bond seems really strong as well.
Yeah, for sure. We tend to, try to joke on each other a little bit, and I think, things like that, continue to, make our relationship, continue to grow over the years, and we're all about joking and, making each other laugh. So she's been really great for me, for my brother as well, and, I'm very appreciative to have, my mom and my dad in my life.
How proud are they of you?
I think I've done enough to make them, proud of me. But my job isn't done. I still have a lot of things that I want to continue to accomplish. And I know that they're my backbone, and they're going to be with me every step of the way.
And the obstacles that you've faced, whether it's, something as simple as just opportunity. What were the opportunities for you to grow and to develop and to play the sports and the recreation, the activities? How tough was that in Jackson?
It was tough, but credit to my family, credit to the organization, CJSO, that I grew up playing with, small club in Central Jackson, gave kids in the inner city an opportunity, a way out, and you know, just to keep us busy and active from, you know, maybe being in the streets like some other kids, or just playing other sports and, you know, not having things to do in a positive light. So credit to my family for, you know, pushing me in that regard and just keeping me focused. And I think that's been a huge stepping stone in my life. And, you know, also having the opportunity to move from Mississippi when I was in my later high school years to go to Florida and play IMG Academy, that gave me a different opportunity and something that I didn't really see in myself growing up. You know, I kind of saw myself, you know, had an opportunity to play in college, but, you know, going to IMG and, you know, actually becoming the athlete, the total athlete is what it was called. You know, that helped me out a lot.
And that must have been tough. And I know leaving home and then going to Louisville, and you talk about that family bond and that family connection.
Right.
You had to grow up pretty quickly, I imagine, did you?
Yeah, it kind of came, you know, a bit fast going into my senior year. Having been with my friends and my club team all along, been with my family. But I knew that was something that I wanted to do, play soccer at the next level and potentially go into a bigger college. You know, that was something that I had to take serious. And when I got the opportunity to do so, you know, I thought about it with my family, thought about it with my brother, for sure. You know, he was one of my biggest advocates in that. And so, you know, he told me, like, this opportunity doesn't come around for a lot of people. And I wanted to make that next step. And going there was one of the best decisions I made. And, you know, it provided me with a bunch of opportunities, and not only just for soccer, but just started taking other things more serious, you know, health and a lifestyle, you know, more of an athlete lifestyle rather than, you know, just doing it Tuesday, Thursdays, you know, practices back in Mississippi. It's more of a day-to-day thing.
I read somewhere, did your dad, was he your first coach?
Yeah.
And did he have to read up on the game? Did he have to kind of coach himself so
he
that he
did,
could coach
he
you guys?
He tried as best as he could. And he used to teach us a little thing, you know, little things. But, you know, with him growing up, it was just about having fun. And, you know, he used to want us to go out there, you know, keep smiles on our faces. But I remember him used to have like a little soccer book that he used to go through and try to, you know, find out little drills that we could do at practice, or he would even search the web and see what he could find on the internet. But credit to him, you know, he gave me the inspiration to, you know, to want to stick with it.
And why do you think there was that level of detail? Was it about knowing that through sport, you and your brother could have fun and could get out and enjoy? Was that their kind of parental role, that they could see that you were athletic?
Right.
And this was talking about the sacrifices that they were prepared to make. He was prepared to go and coach himself,
right,
in this sport so that he could help you develop.
Yeah, I mean, my father was a hard worker. You know, after school, he joined the military. So just, you know, the characteristics that he has as a man, you know, those things start to rub off on me and my brother also. And I see how hard he works, you know, for my family, you know, for my mom specifically. You know, he would give everything. And so just going out just to try to adopt some of those same, you know, traits that he had, that definitely, you know, gave me the inspiration to want to do more and try to go further in life with, you know, with the opportunities that I had. And fortunately, I'm in a position where I am now.
Track, basketball, soccer. At what point did you take the path of soccer?
I think as I got into 9th or 10th grade in high school, you know, that's when I started to, like, just focus mainly on soccer. Mostly because at that point, soccer and basketball was kind of in the same season in high school. So it was tough to, you know, be able to go to practice at soccer. And then because basketball, they were kind of the same time of the day also. And my basketball coach also wanted me to cut my hair. I used to have cornrows
in high
school.
I was going to say that. Was that the tipping point?
But yeah, that kind of for me was a tipping point because, you know, that's
nobody touches the hair.
Yeah, at that point, you know, the cornrows, the braids, that was kind of my thing. And that's kind of, you know, something that I kind of, you know, try to model myself by, you know, the whole Allen Iverson look. I was, you know, something that I looked up to. And, you know, when he told me that, I said, oh, basketball is done for me.
I'm looking at the high school you went to, Callaway High School.
Right.
And I look back in their sporting history, and they had a decent football, American football team back in the mid-70s, went 12-0 at some point. What was sport like, or what was school like for you? Did you enjoy school? Were you academic? Were you kind of like me? I enjoyed the sporting side of things.
Right.
I enjoyed the physical education. What were you like as a student?
My mom used to try to make it a habit of my brother, you know, before we go to practice to make sure we're on top of our homework. I couldn't go to practice. And she was like, hey, did you do your homework? Hey, how was school? You know what I mean? So she kind of stayed on top of me. But I can say the older I got in the latter years of high school, you know, I was focused more on sports. And I kind of, you know, I used to make a lot of friends in school. So I kind of used to be, you know, one of the popular types, you know, the guys that you used to joke mm-hmm. around with and, you know, just enjoy and have fun. And I think that, you know, being, you know, able to, you know, be a good scholar also helped me, you know, in college where, you know, I couldn't just focus on sports. I had to do both. And, you know, even to this point, I'm still interested in going back and getting my degree.
Who was your role model growing up? Was it a family member? Was it a sporting idol?
My role model growing up was, I look up to my brother a lot. I can say I looked up to him a lot because growing up, I wouldn't have been playing soccer if it wasn't for him.
Right.
He was on one of the first teams at my club that had come around. So he was a big role model for me. I would go to all of his practice to watch, to, you know, to run around, to play, just to be around him. You know, somebody that I really looked up to, and still to this day, he calls me after every game, tells me, you know, things that I should do better. You know, he's always my biggest critic, and, you know, I respect it a lot. And, you know, credit to him, I'm here where I am now.
And the kid from Jackson, Mississippi, who is now, in turn, a role model, how does that sit with you as somebody that kids will look up to?
Yes, it's incredible to be able to go home in the off season and to see the impact in so many kids' lives that I've made, and not even knowing so many people are following me, so many people are following the Rapids. It's huge for me. And because that shows me that I can't get complacent. There's still so much more that I want to be able to accomplish and do in my life. And to know that I have the support of my family back home and the kids back home watching me, you know, that continues to add the fire in my life that I need.
And that impact that you have as an athlete that gives them drive, incentive, purpose, and a goal that, you know, if you dream and you work hard, things can be achieved.
For sure. I think, you know, with Mississippi being such a small state and so many negatives going around in the state with, you know, poor, you know, education system, obesity, so many little things that could go around. But just trying to create a more positive life for the kids. And so many of them, you know, are playing basketball, football, soccer, whatever it is. And now to go back and see that there are more kids now playing soccer than it was when I was growing up, you know, it's huge for me. And to have a kid to tell me that I'm their inspiration, you know, it means the world to me. And that shows me that I, you know, my job isn't done yet.
I've talked to, you know, previously with you about the structure and how you came through the game. I think you, you know, you were introduced to the game quite early on.
Right.
What would you say to a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old Marlon Hairston now, who is maybe looking up to you as an MLS player in terms of that drive? If you could have had one piece of advice.
One piece of advice would be
a young
never
kid
say
from Jackson,
can't. Never say can't.
Yeah.
I think, you know, growing up, I never really saw myself in this position as a professional soccer player. You know, my goal was to get to college and have my college tuition paid for so my parents wouldn't have to, you know, worry about spending money for me. And that's what I was reaching for at that time. At that time, I had no inspiration or I had no knowledge of possibly being a professional soccer player because not so many before me from Mississippi had been given the opportunity. So I think I would tell the 5-year-old Marlon Hairston, if I could talk to him, to, you know, drive to be something, you know, that not a lot of people have had the opportunity to be, you know, and, you know, chase your dreams, turn your dreams into reality. That's one of my biggest quotes for myself.
If you weren't a soccer player, clothes? Because isn't your brother, clothes. Do your brother runs a
Yeah,
a
so
shop?
My brother had a store in Atlanta called Curated ATL. It was a little clothing boutique.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's actually living in Miami. He's working at Nike right now, but we're trying to, at the moment, trying to get him back into, you know, things that he's inspired, things that inspire him outside of soccer also. He still goes and play pickup on Sundays, but his soccer days are, you know, beyond him now. So now his focus is on, you know, style and fashion, and I think that would have been doing something with him.
Something to do with clothes. What about music? What's on your Spotify? I probably wouldn't know, even if you told me, to be honest.
I listen to a little bit of everything. I like reggae. I like hip-hop. And Mississippi was, you know, jazz was huge in Mississippi. Right. It still is. So my dad was, you know, a big listener of that type of music. So from time to time, if I just want to relax and chill, you know, throw some jazz on and R&B and just relax. But before a game, I definitely need something to get me pumped up, get the adrenaline going.
And when you do head home, what's the go-to dish? What does your mum say? Marlon, here it is, and it's piping hot on the table.
That's a tough one.
Obviously, as an athlete, it's, you know.
Yeah, I'll say more of a grandma. Grandma dishes, you know, soul food is huge back home. The most unhealthy but wonderful food ever, you know. I think I eat a lot of that in the off season, right when the season ends, but towards when the season's ready to start back, you know, I cut off from it, but fried chicken is huge, fried catfish. I actually found a spot out here in Colorado that I didn't know about, and I've been, you know, from time to time. That's my one cheat meal I have, you know, maybe once, twice a month, something like that, when we have a couple of days off. But soul food is huge, and my grandma, she's a really good cook.
And how often have your family been to come and see you here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park? Have they had a chance to come and see you much?
Yeah, I think my family came out here the year I got drafted here. Right. They came out and watched a game, but for the most part, they come to the games where we go to Dallas or Houston or Atlanta, the places that are closer drive to home. My mom and dad are not the biggest flyers, so anywhere that they can drive to, you know, they're willing to do that. And my brother, he comes out here a lot to watch me play quite a bit. He actually came out here from about a month or so ago, so, you know, he's always supporting me.
And those little moments, to see your family there and the family that has supported you through all of this and have been on the side of whether it's a soccer pitch or a basketball court or a track, to see them there, does that give you a little moment of reflecting how far you've come?
Yeah, it's huge for me. Because growing up, soccer was, you know, so important for my brother. My brother was, you know, he pictured himself in this situation, so he had a couple injuries, things that slowed him down. But, you know, I promised myself that I was going to give everything that I could, you know, to try to make it for myself, for my family, but more importantly for my brother. You know, I could see how much it meant to him growing up. And, you know, I kind of just tried to take the weight of that. And every time he comes here, I try to, you know, get him as close to the field as he can after the game to stand on the field just so he can embrace the moment and so that I can enjoy it also, because it means the world to me to know that, you know, hey, I'm playing in the game, but, you know, he's here with me and, you know, he can enjoy this moment also.
And it's incredible, the final point. I've never met your parents, I've never met your brother, but you're well-rounded, you're well-grounded, hugely popular with the fans, always seem to have time for the fans. And that's a characteristic, that's a personal element. That's not a soccer player. That says a lot about your parents.
Yeah, I mean, I remember growing up, just watching basketball games or soccer games or whatever. And my mom used to always say, you see, he didn't shake his hand after the game, like little things like that. And I think, you know, things like that stuck with me, you know, along my career. And at this point, you know, I'm always hearing in the back of my head, hey, you should do this. So even when I don't want to, I know, hey, she's watching, or what would she tell you to do? So things like that stuck with me to this point. And, you know, it's made me into the man I am now.
Mum knows best.
She knows best.
Marlon, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Marlon Hairston. Next, a bit of parting shot. This part of the Rapids podcast is brought to you by Lunazul Tequila, made using only the best ingredients and classic techniques. Lunazul Tequila. One sip and you know. Well, their players made headlines for their performance against Germany last Sunday. Sadly, by Monday, the focus had shifted to Mexico's fans. It was reported that FIFA had opened investigations into alleged homophobic chants from Mexico fans, seemingly directed at the Germany keeper Manuel Neuer. Really? In the reporting of this story, it transpires that the FMF, Mexican football's governing body, had been fined 9 times. 9 times for supporters' homophobic chanting during the qualifying campaign. The FMF has asked time and again for fans to halt this particular chant. We know the chant, and still the fans continue. So fines haven't worked. At what point are Mexico ordered to play a game or two, or maybe more, behind closed doors? At what point are they threatened with suspension? Now, if the FMF were fined 9 times for racist chants, I suspect either of those threats, a game behind closed doors or a suspension, may have happened before now. Why is a chant which is deemed homophobic not treated with a similar level of severity as all abuse? Now, the head of the National House of Mexico for fans in Moscow said the chant could be perceived in many ways. But he did admit, "We have been asked many times not to do it, so we should be respectful." You reckon? Guys, let's grow up and move on, shall we? That's all we have time for this week. More from the Rapids podcast next week as we edge toward July and the midway point of the season. Cello has disappeared off into the California sunset. Don't forget, the Rapids home this weekend to Minnesota United. Go to coloradorapids.com for tickets or call 303-825-GOAL. Until then, from myself, Richard Fleming, and the since-departed Marcelo Balboa, thanks for your company. It's goodbye for now.
The Rapids podcast is presented by Advocare, the official sports nutrition partner of the Colorado Rapids.